Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, this is Tom from the future. I'm whispering because time travel requires whispering. I don't know if you've listened to the newest episodes in order to find this out, but with the holidays here, there is a brand new thing that Patreon is doing where you can gift subs, which is really cool because that means a few different things. First of all, if you know somebody else who enjoys this show, you can get them a sub to whatever tier you want for whatever amount of time. So if you look at certain rewards and you think it would be really cool to get them those rewards, or just being part of the community, or even just getting ad-free episodes, that's something you can give this holiday season. Also, it means that if you've been wanting to sign up for the Patreon and you haven't been able to, and you want to ask for it as a gift from somebody else, then that can work as well. So both of those things are options. All that you have to do is go to Patreon, log in, or create an account. You can just create a free account. You don't have to sign up with anybody, anyone's Patreon. And then you go to the Patreon page for this show and you choose to gift a thing. You go through all the little options and you send them a gift. It's really simple. It would be super helpful to us. And it's a fun thing to give. So hope you consider that, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday. All right, let's get back to the show.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning.
It is the end of the year, and I thought I would do something very different this week. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We're taking a break from The Hobbit, and this break will actually extend a few weeks. We're taking this week, I'm going to do a Q&A. I posted up on the Patreon and on the Discord and just asked for people to post their questions. Got some really great questions we're going to go over. And then next week is the holiday Robots Radio Network holiday special, where me and some of the other hosts from across the network are getting together to talk about some of our favorite things from the year. So I hope you enjoy that and kind of changing it up a little bit here at the end of the year. I get in this pattern and I'm going through and doing things, and it's really nice to just kind of change things on occasion. And I get to answer some questions and talk about some things that I normally don't talk about. Some of these kinds of topics come up on like the patron bonus episodes, but I don't always get to talk about them in the main episodes. So this week I'm going to spend probably an extra amount of time. I think that's what we'll do. We'll do kind of an extended episode instead of a normal episode plus a bonus episode. We're just going to do one big long episode for everybody to enjoy and have a conversation about. Oh, and by the way, if any of these questions I respond to are things that you have thoughts on as well, then definitely jump on the Discord and jump on the Patreon. Even the post on the Patreon is available for everybody. You don't have to be a subscriber to see that post or to comment. So all of that stuff is up everywhere and available for you to respond and share your thoughts as well. So please join in the conversation. It's always fun to hear everybody's perspectives on these things. All right, so here, let's get into it. I'm going to just kind of take on some of these in some sort of random order, and we're going to see where this goes because I'm recording this part before I actually answer the questions. So here, let's jump on to the, we'll start with the Patreon. This one is from Rob the Princess. Rob, thanks for the question. Rob's been part of the community. He's also part of the Elder Scrolls Lorecast Patreon and all of that. But he asked the question, what are your thoughts on the latest movie, The War of the Rohirrim? That is a good question, and one that I'm not actually capable of really answering because I haven't seen it yet. I haven't made a point to go see it. I know it was in the theaters, and things have just been busy, and I haven't made it a priority. I also feel like it's probably the kind of thing I'll probably watch on a streaming service at some point rather than going to the theater to see. There's not a whole lot of movies anymore that I feel like this is normal. Like, this is how probably most of us are, but there aren't a whole lot of movies anymore that I have to go see in the theater, and I'm happy to just kind of wait and watch it at home. And I haven't seen a whole lot about it. I've been trying to stay spoiler free. I've read a little bits here and there. I've read a few reviews. I've seen people's responses on social media, and I know that it's a little mixed. Some places are going like, well, this didn't need to exist. Some places are going, this feels like, I don't know, fan fiction on top of the Lord of the Rings, which anytime you extend beyond the things that J.R.R. Tolkien wrote himself, it's going to be kind of like fan fiction. You're going to be adding some extra stuff in there. But I've also seen some responses where people were like, oh my God, this is great. And the lore is really interesting. And this is a wonderful story with great characters. And I'm having an emotional reaction or whatever. So I don't know. It seems like a mix. I have a feeling it's probably designed in a way where if you are already a fan, and especially if you really like the Rohirrim and you want to know more about Helm and the original Helm's Deep stuff that was, you know, part of the history and all of that stuff, that you're probably going to enjoy it, I would think. So I don't know. It's also kind of interesting that they took it in the direction of kind of like an anime. And I have mixed feelings about anime. There are cartoon versions of things that I have enjoyed. There are anime, very much more Japanese style things that some I enjoy a lot and some I don't. I have some qualms about that. But I don't know that they're going to fall into the typical anime traps that are the things that I don't like. So I'll just leave that there. We don't need to get into further detail on that, but it's on my list. I'm going to probably make time to watch it as soon as it's available for streaming. And then I'll probably have to comment on it somewhere. So I'll let you all know about that. All right, let's move on to the next one. This one is from, or thanks, Rob. This one's from Druss the Legend, who says, if the movies were remade with the Muppets with one human or elf, dwarf, orc, etc. character, who would you pick as the human character? Like, which Muppet would play Aragorn? Is that what we're asking here? Oh, wow. Oh, this is tricky. I think it's Gonzo. Kermit would be Frodo. Who would be Gandalf? Fozzie? Is Fozzie Gandalf? No, maybe Fozzie. Fozzie's Boromir. Yeah, Fozzie's totally Boromir. Yeah, I think Gonzo is Aragorn. Yeah, I would have to go, like, you'd have to have, like, the main characters be, like, the characters in the party, right? Like, in the Fellowship. So that means you'd have to pick, like, Gimli and Legolas. I'm not going to go through all the characters. But for some reason, Aragorn is Gonzo, and he's the first human character I thought of. So there you go. That's my answer to that question. What a weird question. Also, I would love to hear what your thoughts are. I bet there's a way to design this that the Muppets would totally make sense, because I feel like you can put the Muppets into any movie or any adaptation of anything. They just kind of work like that. Also, I would love to see, like, Saruman be the Swedish chef for some reason. I don't know why that stands out, but I think that's hilarious. Okay, thank you for that one, Dress. Let's jump over to the Patreon. We've got the Patreon questions are way more in depth. Like, some of these ones on Discord are pretty quick, but these Patreon questions, you guys are thinkers, and you're going to challenge me here. All right, we have Time for Tea, who writes, since Aule's apprentices seem to have a habit of turning evil or problematic at best, did anyone in universe, e.g. the other Valar, ever start asking questions about what exactly he's teaching them? In the real world, what do you think might have been Tolkien's motivation for this? I wonder if it could be connected to his dislike of industry and mechanization. So even though Aule himself is not evil, Tolkien might believe that his type of work might somehow be inherently corrupting. Yes. Okay. So this is a very interesting question, and I think this is multiple levels to it. First of all, I am not aware of anything specific where, say, the other Valar confronted Aule and were like, dude, Saruman, what's going on with all your apprentices turning evil? I don't know that we have any insight into any of that stuff happening. Most of the stuff that we have insight to is information about the Valar and specifically living in Valinor from the Noldor who were there and then came to Middle Earth and brought that knowledge with them. And by that point, they wouldn't have known that Sauron or Saruman even would have turned evil like that, like the other way around. Saruman or Sauron, even though he at that point, when they left Valinor, when they made the crossing, was Sauron evil at that point? I think so. I think he was already corrupted, if I recall. But they I don't know that they would have had that knowledge. They also wouldn't have probably had witnessed any of the Valar actually confronting any of the other Valar about their decisions. I mean, there is some stuff in the really early stuff where you have some of the stuff going on with like relations between them and that kind of stuff. But as with all of those things, I think a lot of that stuff is considered to either to be secondhand knowledge, kind of passed down to them, or speculative at best. It is the transition point between the things they experienced and the things that they believe because of their religious views of the way the world started, and turning things that weren't necessarily physical events, or maybe were physical events, but physical events in a very esoteric or massive sort of way, turning those things into things that we could understand as elves or men. I don't think we actually have any of that stuff. We might, or we might have Tolkien's response to that somewhere, but I'm not aware of it. If you are, please let me know. But I know for sure it's not in the Silmarillion. I'm pretty sure it's not in like the Lost Tales, if I recall. Or any of those other published works. It may have been something he discussed in a letter somewhere, but I still kind of doubt that too. But I think the more interesting question here is, what do you think was Tolkien's motivation for this? I think you are correct in that this may be connected to his dislike of industry and mechanization. I think there is a little bit there, but I think it goes deeper than that. My sense of this is Aule is a maker. He's a sub-creator. We're all sub-creators. Tolkien talks about this a lot, how he himself is a sub-creator under God. God is the only creator. We can only take the things that God has made and rearrange them and sub-create with them. Aule struggles with that same thing. He wants to be like his father. He wants to be like Eru Iluvatar and make his own beings and those kinds of things. And he strays too far from his actual place. His place is to make things to the glory of his father and his father's designs, which is Arda. But he strays off that path and wants to make his own things. And then he has to repent. And he's given forgiveness. That's his story. The dwarves are not destroyed. The dwarves are allowed to live. They're just put back asleep and they are only awoken after the elves. So there is some... I think that story represents the allure of power, the allure of self-confidence, this idea of an individual who is given many gifts, who has a significant drive and a will, and the corrupting ability of that power to lead them astray, unless they keep themselves focused on the things that bring glory to their creator. And I think from Tolkien's perspective as a Catholic, that makes a lot of sense. This idea that you need to stay on the path, you need to do and follow God's plan for your life and glorify God through your create your sub-creations and through your work and all of those kinds of things. Those tend to be very traditional Christian values and Catholic values. So I think that there's something going on there. But I think that there's also this element of the idea that power corrupts. Melkor is corrupted by his own power. Individuals who gain too much power or are put in positions of authority who have a sense of hubris. Sauruman was the greatest of the Istari and went astray. That power kind of gets to your head, that sort of thing. And it's also, he also has kind of the flip side of this, is that it's also very novel when individuals who do have a large amount of power, who are powerful individuals, people like Aragorn actually being a very noble and good person, even though he is extremely capable, is novel. The idea of some of the individuals in the First Age who ended up being very powerful individuals who struggled with that. They struggle, you know, the sons of Feanor. There's a lot of that kind of balance that happens. And when an individual does stay on the right path, Galadriel's a great example of that. That is novel. She gives up the power. She gives up the pursuit of the ring for herself and the power to control others. And that is seen as novel and unique and kind of a surprise. So I think this is double-edged here. I think we see a little bit of this in both regards. So great question. And if I missed anything on that or any of these things, please let me know. Let me know your thoughts on these specific details. All right. Thanks, Time for Tea. Let's move on to Gimli a Break. Some of you guys have the best names. We've got Gimli a Break. And then after Gimli a Break, we have a question from the Silly Marillion. So good. All right. Gimli writes, many children in Tolkien's works are defined and often burdened by their father's legacies, such as Turin by Húrin's defiance, Fëanor's sons by his oath, and Elrond by Erendil's heroism. While fathers often take center stage and leave deep imprints, Tolkien also portrays mothers like Morwen, Idril, and Muriel as quiet yet pivotal forces in shaping their children's lives. It's absolutely, like, you are spot on with all of this. What does Tolkien suggest about the weight of familial legacy? Can children ever fully step beyond their parents' influence, or is legacy an inescapable force in Middle Earth? Like so many things that Tolkien describes in these books, they resonate with reality in some very significant ways. I think he was deeply aware not only of the tradition of the legacy of your parents, your father or your mother, and the imprint that that leaves on children and children trying to live up to that legacy that happens throughout religious and mythological works and historical works and historical situations, but also in just humanity in his own time, in just the way that humans work. The legacy of our parents has a significant effect on our own potential, not just in the expectations from the people, you know, our families and the people who came before us and all of that, but also in the ability for that to set up future prosperity or the opposite of that, failing with the idea that you have all this prosperity and hope and potential and then not living into it. I think this works in that way as well, which is why it also works in the historical, religious, and mythological sense, is because this is a very real thing. When you come from a certain family with certain expectations, you are going to carry a certain burden. And that makes sense. I mean, imagine being somebody like, I mean, let's just take Elrond, for example, who I think is portrayed really well in, especially in the most recent season of The Rings of Power. And I'm going to get to that. There's definitely a Rings of Power question coming up. But this feeling of like, he's one of the younger elves and he's extremely capable, but he is coming from a lineage of parents who have done tremendous things. You see it in Aragorn. You see it in so many of these characters. And I think that that resonates because it feels very real. There is a weight of legacy. There is responsibility to the expectations of your family. And that does weigh very much on children. And yet children are their own individuals. They are not their parents. I mean, this is a biblical thing, too. This idea that, like, if you mess up, that could curse your family for generations. And that goes down the line. And my interpretation of that isn't so much like it's a punishment for the individual and God metes out this punishment on the individual and generations of their family because their children didn't really do anything wrong. It's more of a commentary on the fact that your decisions are going to affect your children. Period. You make good decisions, they're going to have to live up to that. But if you make bad decisions, they're going to suffer from that as well. We aren't disconnected. And that ties into other themes in Tolkien's work. This idea that We are all connected. We are all influential for each other. And when we all work harmoniously together, that's when we succeed. All of these things are all, they all fit together. And this is, I mean, I talk about this on, especially on the bonus episodes a lot. This idea that so much of what Tolkien was doing and what was coming out of his work is real commentary about the way the world really is. And that's the beauty of fantasy. He makes this argument in the book that he published, On Fairy Stories. I think it's called On Fairy Stories, where he talks about the importance of fantasy in it being a lens. The fantasy story takes you a distance away from reality so that you can turn back around and now see reality through a new lens. It helps us understand the way the world really is in a much more objective way, because most of the time we're too close to everything. But when you step away from it and see it through that lens and turn back around, it reveals truths. And I think that's 100% true. And on top of that, maybe even unbeknownst to himself, so much of what he wrote does exactly that. It takes our world and it makes it more clear by running it through this filter of a fictional perspective. I hope that all made sense. So yes, I think that there is absolutely something there. I'm not sure if there's anything more to that. I feel like they might be suggesting there's more to it about what's going on here, but I think I answered that well enough. So if you have any other thoughts on that, Gimli, or anybody else, please comment. And thank you for the question. All right, let's go back over to the Discord. This one is from L. Ride, who writes, would you have liked to see the rewritten Hobbit Tolkien intended, or do you prefer the less consistent but more fairy tale original? That's a good question. I feel like with so many of these things, once you fall in love with a thing, you kind of wouldn't want to imagine it different. You know, like the Hobbit will always be the Hobbit. It is not 100% consistent with the larger legendarium. The tone especially is not consistent. That is different, especially in the early parts of the book. Even some of the ways that he handles the ring or the decisions that the characters make. And there's just some inconsistencies there, right? But I think that that's fine. I think that especially for these kinds of works, with the concept that they were written by an individual through that individual's perspective and limited knowledge, that it allows for unreliable narrators, which, again, is the way reality actually works. Anybody who writes anything is an unreliable narrator when it comes to things that are beyond their knowledge or even their own particular perspective on it. We never really get to objective reality. All we have is our subjective understanding of what appears to be the objective reality in front of us. So that actually feels more real to me. I also think that the tone of the book being more serious, if it felt more like The Lord of the Rings, you kind of lose something in that. Not that I don't like the tone of The Lord of the Rings, because it totally fits for that story. But I think that there's something that is more naive or childlike about Bilbo than there is about Frodo. Frodo seems like somebody who is taking on a much larger burden, whereas Bilbo feels like somebody who is venturing out into the big wild world for the first time, you know, kind of like an adolescent, whereas Frodo feels like somebody who's taken on a very adult responsibility and has to deal with adulthood. They feel like different phases of your life in a way. From the perspective of those specific characters. That's a good question. Although we don't have that version, so I bet if we did, I would have a different perspective on that. I probably would have fallen in love with that version too, because I would have had that experience, especially at a young point in my life where that would have been very influential. But, you know, I guess we'll never really know. I think what this does reveal is that for as much as Tolkien wrote, for as much as he published, and as much as they didn't publish that got published later, I always wish there was more, right? Like, it would be nice to just kind of have an end. Like, if people could just live forever and just keep on publishing more work and keep on finalizing the vision that was in his head, that would be amazing. But unfortunately, we will never get that. We only have so much. But the flip side of that is it makes everything we do have more precious, not in the gross sort of, you know, Gollum in the ring sort of way, but in the like actual valuable sort of way. So there you go. Thank you for that question, Elride. All right, let's jump back over to the Patreon. We have a question from the Silly Marillion. In the lore you have broken down and given us, is there a group of people or an event or story that you think should have more information or lore for it? If so, what would you have liked to know more of? Thanks. Yes. I think the big one is the fall of Gondolin. We get Tours story, and then we get the bits and pieces of the story about Gondolin, but other than that, there's a big gaping hole. If you go back a little ways, you'll hear the beginning of Tours story, because we went over that, and then in the Silmarillion you have the fall of Gondolin and kind of some of the details around how that happened and why. But you can tell that Tolkien had intentions of that story being a much bigger tale and never really got to it. And so it leaves a lot of questions about what life was like actually in Gondolin. Who are some of these other characters? Who are some of these groups that were important, powerful people in Gondolin? And we get a lot of references to Gondolin in things like the swords that are found in The Hobbit, you know, like Gandalf's sword in Sting. I mean, these were weapons that were forged in Gondolin. Gondolin is this place that people in the Third Age still talk about and still remember. It's they hearken back to it like we do ancient Egypt or the civilizations of Mesopotamia. It's like forgotten civilization that influences so much of what we do now, because the Sumerians set up basically everything that we used as a foundation for understanding astronomy or certain types of math and language and all of these things that date all the way back to these ancient civilizations. And you get something like that with Gondolin, sort of. I mean, it's a similar sort of thing. It's not that all of their culture goes back to Gondolin. There were multiple places and multiple peoples, but the feeling of there's this hole in our knowledge of the history of this very important city, and even details about, character as important as Tur, or getting to know somebody like Idril better, or heck, even King Turgon. Like, we get certain details and stories about Turgon, and especially the founding of Gondolin, and then like the way Gondolin is destroyed. But like, there's all of this time where they just are kind of there, but we don't know anything about them. They're as mysterious to us as they were to Morgoth, because he couldn't figure out where they were either. So that feels like something I wish we had more detail around. If we extrapolate out from, say, the First Age, there's always a heck. There's even little details around the early elves, or we know a lot about the Noldor, but we don't know as much about the other elven groups, especially the ones who both stayed, like the early Sylvan elves, or these other groups like the Teleri. We know a little bit about the Teleri, like the other elves that go to Valinor. There's just all of these holes when it comes to that stuff. But if we move outside of that, there are definitely other holes. For example, the founding of Rohan. We only have little bits and pieces about how that might have even happened. Or many of the mannish groups that exist in the Third Age, the people who live further to the east or further to the south, the ones that were corrupted by Sauron, what are their lives like? I think that there's a lot there that in some ways is purposely left undescribed in order to leave an air of mystery and a sense of, well, the characters and the perspectives that we have only have so much information, so it makes sense that we wouldn't have that information. But then there's, it would be nice to know more. I think another piece of this, it would be really cool to know more about, say, the rest of the Istari, or what they were doing earlier on before the end of the Third Age. What were their lives like during previous parts and previous times? I mean, heck, there's even the other groups of dwarves, the other clans. We get mostly details about the Longbeards. You know, we get to know the dwarves from The Hobbit and the ones that lived under the mountain and the ones who, or at least some of them, that were interested in Moria. But outside of that, a lot of the dwarf stuff is kind of limited in knowledge. We get little bits of dwarves in the First Age and the Silmarillion. But again, these kind of big holes on information and stories that could have been fleshed out, but there's definitely some stuff we'll never know. So thanks for that awesome question. All right, back to Discord. This one's from Flatus Tanus, which sounds like a dirty name, but I don't know what that actually means. It sounds Latin. Flatus writes, I really like the way you tell about Tolkien. You are a huge fan of his work, of course. You speak without politics or judgment, but I am curious. What is your honest opinion of the Rings of Power series? I'm not a hater of the series, and I am glad season 2 is, in my opinion, better than season 1. For me, I just feel like they stole something that could have been so much better. That's an interesting way to put it. I think at any time you get the turning of somebody else's work into another format or expanding on that work when you're not the original author, it's always going to come with some difficulty. Let me just put it like that. And if you are one of the patrons, then you've heard me talk about the Rings of Power, especially as season 2 went through. I did a little bit more this season going into the details and what I liked and didn't like about it and some of the connections to other bits of the lore and those kinds of things. So those episodes are still available if you'd like to sign up. But this isn't a sales pitch. I'm not trying to. I mean, it's nice if you want to sign up, but that's not why I bring that up. I bring it up to say that if you want more than just this answer, there is more of that available. But to your question, my general sense of the Rings of Power is that I'm glad that it exists. I don't think it's perfect. I have had my critiques, and I have definitely pointed out things that I thought could have been better. And I agree with you. The second season is a marked improvement over the first season. I feel like the first season did drag a little bit. The pacing is a little bit slow. But I think the things that they did do, or at least aimed to do correctly or well, was to try to harness some of the magic from Peter Jackson's films and put them on TV. The sets, the way the characters look, I don't have any issues with that. I know the first season people had issue with like elves with short hair, and I was like, whatever, get over it. It's like not every elf is going to have long hair. Plus, it allows for certain amounts of character development. I think that that's what they're doing with Elrond, is they're showing him become more jaded and older, and they're transforming him from what looks more like a young elf to somebody who looks more like the way Elrond looks in Peter Jackson's films. So there's reasons why they're doing these things. And I think that they are also kind of leaning into the parts of the lore that were less focused on in the Peter Jackson films. One example of this would be the nature of orcs. The orcs, for the most part, in Peter Jackson's films are shown from the perspective that they were shown primarily in books like The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings as being basically bad guys and these like working class miserable individuals who have these terrible existences and are just bad guys, period. But that, like I've discussed before, is not the full version of how Tolkien conceived of orcs, especially later in his life. He wasn't happy with them being just one note villains. He wanted to understand them as actual individuals with souls that may have to go somewhere after they die. And a people group that have been tortured and corrupted over time, but that still means that they are people. And we're seeing elements of that in the second season. And I think that that's a good thing. I think that that actually fleshes things out in a much more well-rounded way, because it plays to things that Tolkien himself wrote about. And just because they're not exactly the same version of orcs that we saw from Lord of the Rings doesn't mean that they're not accurate to the lore. They are. Or accurate to Tolkien's concept of what they were. In fact, I think they've done this in a few different ways where they've pulled things from the legendarium and kind of shown us things in a different light. I don't have any problems with any of that. I also very much appreciate them trying to stick to both the spirit of his work and the tone of his work. I think a lot of that actually does come through in The Rings of Power, and they've been getting better at it over time. And by that, I particularly mean some of the themes that that come about, themes of hope, themes of banding together, themes of humility, being better than hubris. A lot of these kinds of themes show up in Tolkien's work, and they are reflected in The Rings of Power. The way that they've kind of fleshed out the elves to be more dynamic and interesting and a little bit more less one note. Maybe that's the best way to put it. And to show us different angles from the elves and those kinds of things. I think some of the actors have done a tremendous job. If I would level any critique against the show, it's that they kind of took a big old chunk, a big old bite out of it, and tried to run multiple storylines at the same time. And not every storyline works as well as every other storyline. They've also had to deal with this idea of taking the Second Age and trying to hit all of the major events and all the major characters without it spanning thousands of years. I think that's a very difficult thing to do. And so, and I've talked about this again at length, they've kind of squished everything down so that it all happens right at the end of the Second Age rather than in the, you know, 1,000 years leading up to the end of the Second Age. They've also kind of squished Gandalf in there a little bit in order for us to have Gandalf or at least a wizard to follow. So they've made some of these choices, which don't always line up exactly with the way the lore plays out, but I can understand why they would choose to do that. And if you are going to get upset, or as some people do, or they kind of point that stuff out and they hold that against it, then you still need to hold those same kinds of things against what Peter Jackson did with his films. If you're going to complain about it in one medium, you have to complain about it in the others. If you're going to complain about the fact that, oh, he kind of changed the way this character works or this personality a little bit, then you have to point those things out in The Lord of the Rings, because he does the same thing there. And I totally get that people might not like that. I totally get that. But I feel very much the way I did about The Lord of the Rings, and maybe even more particularly The Hobbit adaptation, as I do about The Rings of Power. I understand why they made certain changes, or why Peter Jackson made certain changes. And I may not have made that same choice, but it doesn't mean that I'm sad that it exists. I'm glad that it exists. And the little kid in me who at, you know, 12 years old wishes I could actually live in Middle Earth and witness all of these things for myself, being able to see this on the screen, being able to see that people are enjoying this, especially younger people are enjoying this and getting these stories in ways that were not available to me when I was young, I think is important. And also, I think we have to remember that these will not be the final adaptations of these stories. We will get many other adaptations of these stories. These are stories that will be retold over and over or expanded on, and they will be a part of our modern mythology, maybe even, much like other stories. I mean, how many times are they going to remake Dune? How many times are we going to get a different Star Wars story from a different angle about, you know, whatever the latest buzz is with Star Wars? You know, like these series, these IPs are going to live on potentially forever. So it's fine. I think it's fine that we have this version of this adaptation. I'm still enjoying it. It's not perfect, but that's okay. And I'm glad that it exists. So that's my perspective on it. And I think it's fair to critique it. I think it's fair if you don't enjoy it. I think that's all of that is totally fine. We are all very different people. We're all coming from different places. And what really gets me is when people are like toxic or angry. And I don't think that this warrants that. I think that that's too far. It's one thing to say, well, I wish they did some things differently. It's not my favorite thing. That's totally fine. It's also totally fine to be like, this is my favorite thing ever. I absolutely love it and I can't wait for the next season. I think that's totally fine too. I love that people love things, and there's so much opportunity in the world to find things to love and for this to be another one of those things. And if that makes your day better, Well, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. So that's my perspective on that. Thank you for that question. All right, let's move on to the next one. All right, one more from Discord. This one's fun. This is from Toshi8385Mox, who says, question, what is your opinion on the two new Lego sets, the Lord of the Rings Lego sets that have come out for the last few years, Rivendell and Barad-dûr? I love Legos. I grew up with Legos. My kids have played with Legos. I have a little Lego A-Wing, speaking of Star Wars, in my office, because I always loved those little A-Wing fighters. The X-Wings are cool too, but the A-Wings were kind of my jam back when I played the X-Wing game on PC in the late 90s. I loved those. And I don't own either the Rivendell or Barad-dûr. Barad-dûr, got to do the ooh sound with those U's. I don't own those. They're very expensive, but they look really cool. I mean, I'm down with it. I think, heck, the more Lord of the Rings Legos, the better. I know that on the regular, when somebody posted that, when Toshi, posted this on the Discord, I looked them up, and it looks like they go for like a few hundred bucks, or at least the Barad-dûr one does. But they seem to be on more discount on eBay, only like $100 and something, which seems like a big discount over like $300. But it's still a lot, right? And there's a lot of pieces. Like, that seems like a very big set. And as a kid, the biggest set I had was like a pirate ship, I think I got for Christmas one year, maybe when I was about 12. But man, I would have loved these as a kid. Absolutely. I'm a little tempted to pick one up as an adult and just put it on my desk, next to me in my office and just kind of have it there on display. But yeah, I think those are very cool. I don't know what else to say about them, but I'm glad they exist, and Legos are awesome. So yeah, if any of you have any of those, yeah, tell me what you think. Tell me what you think about actually building them and having them in front of you. I bet they're really cool. All right, let's go back to the Patreon. We've got two more questions here on Patreon. This one comes from Simone R., who writes, I had a thought the other day in relation to Bilbo and Frodo being able to carry the ring. Bilbo has the Took side, which is hinted at having a bit of elvish ancestry in the Hobbit book, because they, the Tooks, are quite different from other hobbits. Do you think this supposed elvish ancestry would feed into both Bilbo and Frodo being able to carry the ring? Yeah, I think it's mentioned as like a thing that they rumored, like it's a rumor that runs around in the Shire that certain families have kind of an elvish ancestry. And I don't know if that is meant to be taken literally so much as it is meant to be representative of the fact that they act differently than most hobbits do. I think that usually that is in reference to they are a little bit less proper. They are a little bit more likely to go on adventures. They are a little bit more likely to be curious about what is out in the world and the wilds and adventurous and those kinds of things. That has always been my interpretation. But now that you bring it up, let's consider the idea that maybe it's a literal thing. First of all, I'm not sure how that would play out literally. We do know that hobbits are a type of man. They're a type of human. They are not elvish. They're not dwarves. They are mannish. And not every man is purely a man. You know, for example, many of the people from Numenor come from the lineage of those who were the combination of elves and men, and that exists. The elven blood does exist in the human bloodline. So if that's the case, how would hobbits have gotten that elven blood? Well, it probably didn't come from the high line of the line of kings and those kinds of things, because they're not exactly connected to the Numenoreans in that way. If anything, hobbits come from humans that lived in Middle Earth and parts of Middle Earth that were generally ignored by the powerful kingdoms of the First Age. So that means that if they do have elven lineage, then it would have been with some of the more wild elves that are out there. Could that have happened? Sure, I guess so. I don't see a reason why it couldn't have happened. I would be a little curious as to why anybody of hobbit ancestry would have been particularly either appealing to an elf in a romantic way. I think that seems a little odd, but also would have been around elves enough to even develop a relationship. Maybe it's a Melian and Thingol sort of thing where, you know, some hobbit wandered off into the wilderness and came upon an elf and fell in love and they ended up getting married and having kids or something. I don't know. I don't think it's impossible. It just seems improbable, which is why part of the reason why I lean on the idea that it's more of just kind of a talking point. Like, the Tooks are a little weird. Why would they be weird? Well, maybe they have fairy blood, fairy being the elves. That's typically my perspective on that. But maybe. Now, there's another piece to this question. Even if they did have elven blood, would that enable them to carry the ring? And I'm not sure that it does. I think the One Ring is equally as dangerous to elves as it is to men, as it is to dwarves. Anybody. And in fact, the more powerful you are, or the greater your lineage, we talked about lineage earlier, the more that the ring may actually play upon those qualities and be a detriment to you. In fact, it's the idea that the hobbits were pretty lowly, that they were humble, that they didn't think big of themselves, and they didn't come from a place in a history of power that enables individuals like Bilbo and Frodo to, or even Sam, or especially Sam, to withstand a certain amount of the temptations of the ring. Is simply put, it's generally not in them to be tempted by power. Sam, for example, would love to have a garden that spans the whole world, you know, like that sort of thing. When he's tempted, he's tempted in ways that make sense for Sam, but they're not particularly domineering or evil. It's just he wants an amazing garden, you know, like that. It's a very humble kind of thing and a very natural kind of thing. And I think that's just part of why they are a little bit more resilient to the ring than other people. And it plays into that, the theme about humility and all of that that we've talked about already. So I think that's really what's going on there. But I also don't think that it's impossible, but I don't think we have any evidence for it. So it is kind of a fun little headcanon. Any evidence out for it outside of just kind of the brief mentioning of it. So there you go. Thanks, Simone. All right. I think this might be the last one, unless there's one that I skipped over. I'll double check. But this is from The Waffle 110. How much do we know about the other continents on Arda? Whenever I look at a map of the whole of Arda, it shows these large areas of land to the east and south of Middle Earth. I know since Middle Earth is meant to be a mythos for Europe, and specifically the UK, those places are probably Africa and Asia, but what do we know about them in the context of Arda? Another wonderful question. So, yes, Tolkien does talk about the idea that the English in particular don't really have their own mythology, and he wanted to write a mythology for the English. So there is some of that going on, and you can look at the maps and kind of perceive it as being Europe, and maybe even the Shire being like England, and then everything else kind of expands out from there. There have been interpretations that have said that. I don't know that that was intentional so much on Tolkien's part. I think it was, if anything, it was a kind of an unintentional thing. This idea that as you go to the east or to the south, you're going to come across lands that are distinctly different from the lands that you came from in the north and the west, which feels like it tracks for somebody who was, you know, living in that part of the world. But you also have to remember that he was born in South Africa. He, as a child, knew what it was like to live in Africa. So Africa wasn't so much of a foreign place to him as it was a place that was far away from where he currently lived when he was writing, and where he built his family and his career and all of that, and where his family had come from. He knows that he had German heritage and was very European in his family lineage. So you do have a little bit of that going on. You also have this idea that as you get further away from these areas that are more familiar to the characters in the story, that the peoples of those areas are shrouded in more ambiguity. Their cultures are different. Their skin colors might even be different. There's places where he uses the word, what does he use? He uses a specific word to mean that they were probably of darker skin. I forget which word it was, which makes sense if you travel away from Europe, where as you go north and west, people tend to have lighter skin. If you travel south or, you know, southeast, then people tend to have darker skin. So it makes sense. Not just from the perspective of it modeling Europe and Asia and Africa, but just kind of his general sense of the way a globe works. You know, if you move south and the sun gets brighter, then people tend to have darker skin because they need more melanin in their skin to deal with more sunlight. It's just kind of the way that works, right? So I get that. I get that perspective. But let's talk specifically about the maps. The only maps that we have that are canon are the ones that Tolkien drew himself. And when you look this stuff up online, you find a lot of other people adding in extra stuff in order to try to explain the other areas that were either alluded to or mentioned in some of Tolkien's works. But be very careful about what you're actually looking at. Notice there is a distinct difference and limitation between the things that Tolkien drew, the boundaries of his maps, and then when you get to the edges and it's just like, here's other stuff. And even then, the details kind of fall apart as you get closer to the edges, especially east and south, than what you get when other people draw these maps. There is, in the Silmarillion, there's the Cuvienin, where the elves, the big lake where the elves awoke, is very, very far to the east. And there are people who have kind of added that into maps of Middle Earth. There are people who have taken Beleriand and the Middle Earth map and kind of fit them together to help understand how those two things would have fit, because he drew those maps separately, but they would have been part of a much bigger continent, which he didn't actually draw fully. I remember opening up the Silmarillion as a teenager. And once I had read through the text once or twice and really got a sense of like, oh, these are supposed to be connected. Beleriand is actually the part of Middle Earth that went under the water. And like the Blue Mountains are the eastern side of the Beleriand map, but they're on the very western side of the Middle Earth map from like the Lord of the Rings. How did these actually fit together? And having to use my imagination to try to like make sense of it. And then years later, when the internet, you know, became a much more prevalent thing and people were making their own versions of these maps and being like, oh, that's how they fit together. That makes sense. Yet never seeing that from Tolkien himself. So do note that the only ones that are canon are the ones that Tolkien drew. Those are the ones that show up in the books, and maybe even some extra content as well. I think there might be some version of maps that didn't actually get published, but were sketches or early sketches of some of those. I don't fully remember exactly what the differences between them, but those are things that you can look up. Now, why would other people add other continents? Because they're kind of alluded to. There's hints that Middle Earth isn't the only continent. We know that there is Aman, that, you know, the continent that Valinor is on and that got separated from the world. And there is potential that there is more beyond just the main continent of Middle Earth. But again, that's all very speculative. We don't actually have too much in, like, I guess you could say, specific canon detail about what those would be like, other than, well, yeah, like the Numenoreans sailed to the east and eventually they came back around the globe, you know, like those kinds of comments, and they found other lands out in that direction, or they sailed to the south and they found other lands. But the full scope of the size or exact locations or the shapes of those places, or if they were fully separated as if they were different continents or islands, or if they, you know, some of them were connected, a lot of those details are very murky. Now this is all from memory. I'm kind of just talking on the spot from this, and this might be a fun episode to dig a little bit more into for a bonus episode in the future, and then I could talk a little bit more specifically about what was actually published and what people have speculated about and how those things might be different. But for the most part, that's my general sense of it, is one, look for the maps that Tolkien drew himself. Those are canon. Two, take anything else with the consideration that they are somebody else's interpretation. And they may be actually based on certain speculation and certain lines in the documents and things, but ultimately they're an interpretation of what those details were trying to describe. So there's my answer. There you go. I know that's a little convoluted, but definitely something I might be digging into in the future. So stay tuned for that potentially. All right. I think that's it from the questions. I did get a question about the Dwarven clans in the Return to Moria, the game that came out a while ago. I know it's free on Epic Games like this last week or so, so you can pick it up. I did pick it up. I did grab it for free. I haven't loaded it up and played it yet. I tend to bounce off these like crafting survival games. I always want to enjoy them more than I actually do, but this one might be fun to just kind of, you know, try out. It's when it came out, I did ask the community about it and was like, maybe we could set up like a game night and do something like that. So maybe I might actually still want to do something. We'll see. Maybe I'll give it a try and I'll see what it seems like. And it probably is the kind of thing. It's more fun to play with other people, but then you have to deal with schedules and all of that. But, to answer the question, I would be very surprised if the clans mentioned in that game are not part of the Legendarium. We know that there are seven clans of dwarves. We know there's the Longbeards and then there's everybody else. I've done bonus episodes about that. And I would be very, very surprised if they were referring to clans that didn't exist in the books. I don't think that's the case. I haven't heard that to be the case. So I would imagine that these are all actually based off of actual lore. So again, I haven't played it, so I don't know for sure, but I would be very surprised if that wasn't the case. So there you go. Video game question. All right. This was fun. Thank you everybody for your questions, and maybe I'll make this kind of a semi-regular thing. I would love to hear more of your questions. And in the future, if you have specific questions about any of the episodes we've done, I always love seeing comments and questions on the Discord or on the Patreon. If there's anything else that you think I missed or you have specific perspectives over anything I cover, I would always love to see your comments. All of that stuff is wonderful. I love being part of a greater community that just loves the same things I love and wants to keep digging deeper into these details. So thank you for being a part of this. And maybe we'll make this like a yearly thing. Maybe this will be like a holiday Q&A. And if you have any questions about me, I'm pretty open about most things. So feel free to ask me about what I'm doing with the show or any of the other shows that I do, the podcasts I do, the podcast network. If you have something that you would like to start a podcast about, I love working with other creators and helping them get their shows started and that sort of thing. That's why we have the Rocket Club as part of the network. And it's something you can sign up for. And then I will be there to help mentor you and get your own show started and figured out and all of that stuff. So again, it's all part of being part of this community. And thanks for being here. I really do appreciate it. All right. Next week, you'll be getting the big long holiday bonus episode. Well, it's not really a bonus. That doesn't make sense. It's not a bonus episode. It's a different holiday special episode. There will be no bonus episode this week. There will be no bonus episode next week. But then I should be back the week after that, after the new year, with a brand new Hobbit episode and a bonus episode for patrons and all of the regular stuff. We'll be kind of going back to what I normally do. And now that we're in at the end of the episode, let's do the Patreon thing. I got to welcome some new patrons. We have Laura and Juan is my hero and Americano. I think there's like a three in there as an E. I hope I pronounced that correctly. And Bereaver 1989. Thank you so much for signing up on the Patreon. So glad that you are here. Also, have to shout out all of our VIP patrons. Here we go. Let's see if I can get through it all. AK Music Lover, Apollo, Atlee Morton, Azzle Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Brandy D, Christopher E, almost messed that one up, Courtney S, Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S, David M, Divine Madman, Fulcrum, George B, Gerald, or Gerald, do I pronounce that? Is it Gerald and not Gerald? Have I been saying Gerald? Gerald CFC, Gimli A Break, Huan Is My Hero, Gemma D, Jezzer, Katie S., Capenna, Lori B., Mason Weathertop, Nick K., Nostrils of Sauron, Richard J., Rivqua, Rosie Rosé, Saruman the Stinky, The Silly, Marillion, TJT, and Tour Son of Hur. Thank you so much for all of your support. And do remember that patron gifting is a thing. So if there's someone in your life who loves the show or would love getting access to any of the bonus extra stuff, then go check it out. It's very easy to gift. You just sign up, choose which tier you want, how many months, and you gift it away to them. And you can even ask that from other people. If people are like, hey, I don't know what to get you for the holidays, you could be like, hey, here's a thing. All of that would be very helpful to me. So I appreciate all of the support. Also, we've got a new review that came in. I don't think I've read this one before. This one is from Maddie B 623, who writes, wish I could give 100 stars, everything and more I was looking for in a podcast. I'm a delivery driver for UPS and started this podcast a little over a week ago and binged the entirety of it. And I can't wait for more episodes. Don't listen to the pronunciation police. I mispronounced pronunciation. It's one of my favorite parts of every episode. Cheers, Tom. Thank you so much, Maddie. And thank you to everybody who takes the time to leave a 5-star review, either on Apple or anywhere else. Also, the platform I was using to look at all of the reviews across Apple, across all the different countries, is no longer up. They killed it. It's dead. And I haven't found a good substitute for that. So now I just have to search. And what that means is I can see reviews in the US, but I can't see reviews from all the different other areas and countries and regions and things like that. So I still appreciate it. If you don't hear me reading out your review, it's probably because I just can't see it. But I still very much appreciate it, and I appreciate all of you. Have a wonderful holiday. I'll see you again soon. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, this is Tom from the future. I'm whispering because time travel requires whispering. I don't know if you've listened to the newest episodes in order to find this out, but with the holidays here, there is a brand new thing that Patreon is doing where you can gift subs, which is really cool because that means a few different things. First of all, if you know somebody else who enjoys this show, you can get them a sub to whatever tier you want for whatever amount of time. So if you look at certain rewards and you think it would be really cool to get them those rewards, or just being part of the community, or even just getting ad-free episodes, that's something you can give this holiday season. Also, it means that if you've been wanting to sign up for the Patreon and you haven't been able to, and you want to ask for it as a gift from somebody else, then that can work as well. So both of those things are options. All that you have to do is go to Patreon, log in, or create an account. You can just create a free account. You don't have to sign up with anybody, anyone's Patreon. And then you go to the Patreon page for this show and you choose to gift a thing. You go through all the little options and you send them a gift. It's really simple. It would be super helpful to us. And it's a fun thing to give. So hope you consider that, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday. All right, let's get back to the show.